Good morning. Welcome to our guests today. It's good to have you. I may have shared with many of you that I grew up I went to St. Louis School for grade school, but every Sunday we went to St. Patrick's Church downtown, which is right next to the FedEx Forum. And so I grew up there from the whole time I was growing up. And every Sunday, my dad would drive the bus, and he would go into all the what they used to call the foot homes, and pick up all the kids. So I grew up with most of my friends. 90% of them growing up were inner city African American kids, and I remember they were from like Lauderdale Courts. So you may have heard of Hurt Village, and some of the foot homes, and. You know, I didn't even think about it. This is our life, right? So I remember one Sunday, I'm sitting in the very back row of the church where all the good Catholics sit. And so I'm sitting back there, you know, and so there's all my buddies, and we're sitting back there, and the priest is up there talking about something. And I'm sitting there next to my buddy, Theodore. And so Theodore starts looking at my arm, and he's looking at his arm, and he looks at my arm, and he looks at his arm, and he turns to me, and he's like, "Man, I think you're white." And I was like, what? Dude, what? It's like, "Man, I think you're white." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm white." Like, I never got that memo. Like, no one ever told me, "You're white," okay? Which, in some ways, we never thought about us. We never realized that we were two different colors until we were in second grade. Just never occurred to us, which in some ways is precisely how it should be, right? You even think about it. And over the years, as I go back to it, I thank God every day. I just am so blessed. I've got two amazing parents. But Theodore came from a very, very, very difficult home. And I knew that even in second grade. I was right when crack cocaine entered that neighborhood in downtown Memphis. And I just remember the huge impact that had on that community. And I remember being in second grade thinking, "Wow, I am so blessed. Jesus, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you." In case I didn't say thank you, thank you. You ever have that feeling? You know, none of us are perfect parents. None of us are perfect parents, including spiritual parents. Maybe if we sum it up, this whole thing we call parenthood, into one thing, we could say, we teach our children about life, but our children teach us what life is all about. We teach our children about life, but they really teach us what life is all about. Well, sounds nice, Father, what does that mean? It means this. When we're raising our kids, we say, "Honey, this is how you change a tire on your bicycle. This is how you apply to college. This is how you go potty by yourself. This is how you wash the dishes. This is how you iron your own clothes." But then as time goes on, they begin to teach us a deeper sense of meaning. That sense where you go in and you you just want to make sure your child is still breathing. Right? Are you still breathing? Okay. Okay. Wow, I haven't messed it up for another day. Okay. You have those feelings. And moms, I mean, I talk to moms all the time, and I'm like, you know, that human being was inside your body not long ago. That's amazing, man. Like, they weren't here, and now they're here. This is incredible. But I pray for parents all the time because I see the struggles that they go with. I mean, think about Luke chapter 2. There's this great scene when Joseph and Mary, you know, they go to Jerusalem with Jesus and they lose him for 3 days. And Joseph is like, "Wonderful. I lost the Savior of the world. Great. Nice. I had one job." Okay. I mean, poor guy. Don't you know Mary was like, "Wait, what? What you did what?" I mean, we feel this way often as parents. We think, gosh, I mean, could I mess this up anymore? Like, it seems like if we do this, that doesn't work. If we try this, it doesn't work. And if we do this, then they're going to react over here. So, you know what? I'm just going to sit on my hands. Because I apparently have the Midas touch of destruction. I mean, you ever feel this way? But it's really true. We teach our children about life, but our children teach us what life is all about, right? I want to tell you just very briefly to kind of accentuate this point about somebody I look up to. His name is Vivek Ranadive. Vivek Ranadive grew up in Mumbai, India. Ended up going to MIT and Harvard, got an MBA. And he's probably now about 68. But in 2009, his daughter Anjali comes to him. She's in junior high. She said, "Dad, we want to play basketball, but our basketball team doesn't have a coach. Would you coach?" And Vivek was like, "Honey, I love you, but I've never touched a basketball. I've no idea." He said, "I grew up playing cricket." She's like, "Please." He's like, "All right." Talk about Peter getting out of the water, walking on water on that boat, right? So he does this, and he starts reading about basketball basics, okay? First year, they won state. First year. In Vivek Ranadive's words, they were a team of nerds. They were into microbiology and chess. They didn't know anything. They won state for their region or for their age group. How? Anybody ever heard of the full court press? I had no idea what this was because I didn't play basketball for obvious reasons. With chess, you sweat less, okay? And so if you're not familiar with what the full court press is, usually when somebody scores a goal, everybody runs to the other end of the court to defend the goal, right? You don't have to do that. So when they're going to toss the ball in, everybody gathers around them so that they have nowhere to go, right? And they turn the ball over. So that's what they did. They knew that they would lose if they went to a normal game with these seasoned basketball players. So they'd wait, turn over the ball, put up a layup. They won, all of them. So you can imagine that the parents of the opposite team went ballistic. Because my child is the one who wins. They've spent their whole life playing. So you can imagine, of course, they go to the ref and they're like, "Do something. Do something." And the ref was like, "Dude, it's in the playbook. It's perfectly legal. Nobody does it, but it's perfectly legal." And they won. And Vivek Ranadive, in his words, he said, "I learned two very important lessons. Number one, how much I love these girls. And number two, how crazy some parents can get." I mean, I can tell you, I see this all the time. When I go to different sporting events, some people lose all sanity. I tell people there's two times when they lose sanity: at their child's sporting event and in a wedding reception. And I mean, it happens. But all this brings me to a few questions. What are some of the major problems that parents face today? What are some of the major challenges that parents face today? This is coming from a celibate man. Number one, worry. We just worry. We worry incessantly. I often say mothers go to bed at night thinking about their kids. They wake up at night thinking of their kids. They wake up in the morning thinking of their kids. And they wake up in the morning and they turn to their husband and he's like, "Right? It's okay, honey, don't worry." It's like Martha in this gospel, right? Just worry, just like wringing her hands, yeah? Worry, doubt. Many of the parents that I talk to, I know that some of us here, you remember during quarantine when everybody was shut down and you had a child that's staring at their computer all day, every day, clearly needing some social interaction. On the other hand, you're afraid to let them have social interaction because you don't want them to get sick. We didn't know in those days. It's before the vaccine. But their friends are getting together and like, honey, I don't know. Maybe, you know, well, my friend's parents are saying it's fine. Well, honey, I don't. It's doubt. Do I give enough time to my kid? Number three, trying to get as parents on the same page with your parenting. No small task. Trying to get parents on the same page in your parenting. It's not uncommon, for instance, we'll have one parent who's the popular one, they spoil the kid, the other one who's the enforcer. Or you have some parents, you've heard me say before, they tend to cocoon their kid to such an extent that when they grow up, they go the other way. Right? So how do we get on the same page? Well, for one thing, you get together behind closed doors, you present a unified front. No small task. Priests have it easy. Okay? I so much admire this. One of the other things that we see, anybody ever see it, by show of hand, how many people have ever seen the movie The Lion King? Ever seen that? Okay, you remember Simba? Simba's the newborn lion from Mufasa. You remember at the beginning of The Lion King where they held up Simba and, you remember that? Yeah. Okay, some people with their kid, they fall into what's called the Simba effect. You know? They just put them on such a pedestal, right, that they can do no wrong. And thus, Vivek Ranadi's point. Do you have any idea, brothers and sisters, how difficult it is for a kid like that? If you fast forward 15 years, do you have any idea how difficult it is for a kid like that to say no to things that are bad for them? Why? Because nobody's ever said you can't have that. In clinical psychology, they call that delaying gratification. Sometimes our parents are like that. It's my kid. Sadly, this often happens to couples that struggle with infertility. As horrible as that is, as difficult it is, they finally have a child and they're like, it's the panacea to their problems. Finally, one of the biggest challenges that I see that parents sometimes go through is navigating social media with their kids. Do you know, this is recent study, please don't take my word for this, look it up. Recent Pew study showed that 97% of teenagers are on social media. 97%, okay? Imagine that you're 14, you're Anjali's age. Imagine you're 14 and you see on social media that all your friends were invited to something, but you didn't get invited. What does that do to your self-esteem? And then you go to your parents and you're crying and we're like, honey, it's okay. How are you going to respond to that? We need to think about these things. I'm not saying you have to be a techie, but we need to know some basics, brothers and sisters. You know, here in this parish about 8 months ago, we decided to have a class to help parents navigate social media and help teenagers understand their self-esteem doesn't depend on social media. So we just thought, we'd never done it before. So let's throw it out there, see what happens. 28 minutes, class was full. We filled it in 28 minutes. It behooves us to learn this stuff. We teach our children about life, but they teach us what life is all about. I'll close with this. I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I'm guessing if I went to most of your homes and looked through your closet, your garage, and your attic, I would find athletic equipment that's no longer used, musical equipment that's no longer played, and toys that are no longer played with, right? So we still have our kids' bicycle from when they, years ago, but now they're grown and they left, but there are so many memories attached to that, right? We don't want to get rid of it. But by way of an analogy, sometimes as parents, we can feel kind of discarded by our adult children when they leave the house. We can kind of feel a little bit like the toy or the drums or whatever. We kind of feel discarded. Like they kind of just call if they need something. Side note, parish priests often feel the exact same way. Father, I need a funeral. I need a wedding. I need a baptism. But all that time in between, you never see him. We feel that way. But that's what we signed up for. Parents, that's the hard reality, is you and I are called to a deeper love, a self-sacrificial love, even if they don't love you back, because that's the risk of love. Because you could say, honey, I love you, and they could say nothing. Think about how God feels. 100 years ago, none of us existed. And he took a gamble in letting you and I breathe, exist. When many people are like, I don't need you, dude. I'm good. There's risk involved with love. We signed up for that, guys. Put your crash helmet on. But here's the good news. That's the path to peace. He who saves his life will lose it, but he who loses his life for a higher path will save it.